today is a study that we're still in the process of analyzing. This is the first sort of wave of analysis of a NIDA-funded study that was just completed, looking at a criminal justice community supervision population in which they've all been diverted from jail in lieu of continued jail or prison incarceration. They all have some substance use problems, majority with dependence and abuse. And in these community supervision programs, we had the opportunity to look at two types of tracks. One is for those with dual diagnoses, mental and addictive disorders, under community supervision, men and women, and the other is substance users only. And we defined mental illness as major and moderate schizophrenia, major depression, bipolar disorder, moderate being post-traumatic stress disorder, and generalized anxiety. We didn't include the other kinds of problems that may be included in other studies. So it's just sort of giving you a sense. And the other issue here is that it was a treatment and treatment-enhanced comparison study, which means everybody was receiving some sort of treatment for substance abuse, which, again, as you'll see, means that our findings, it was very difficult to find differences for HIV versus those that are already receiving substance abuse treatment, because substance abuse treatment is one of the treatments for HIV prevention. So very briefly a background. So diversion, just because everybody has different language, wanted to make sure that we're on the same page here. Diversion is an intervention that either avoids jail or prison or reduces length of confinement. It provides access to treatment. It facilitates the reduction in substance use, mental health symptoms, criminal justice involvement, increases life satisfaction and cost savings over time. The blue highlights are for single-site studies, all of this has been found. For multi-site studies, really the blue highlights are the robust findings that have been found over time. So sometimes you've seen changes in substance abuse, sometimes in mental health, and those of us that have looked at diversion models realize that depending on the model, you'll have effects in these other areas, because it has nothing to do with diversion. It really has to do, of course, with the treatment that people are receiving. So, the other piece here is that there are two types of diversion. The one I'm focusing on is the first, which is mandated diversion, meaning that there are criminal justice consequences for failure. People get remanded into jail. They may go back into prison. They may move from outpatient to inpatient. They may not get to see their family. So there is a whole sanction model when you're under community supervision. And there's other kinds of diversion in which people are released into treatment in lieu of continued incarceration or future prison without then being tracked by the criminal justice system and having to undergo sanctions. So basically, we thought, okay, in earlier work that I've done and that we've done in multi-site studies, we know that diversion increases access. It can increase retention depending on the level of the coerciveness of the program, as well as individual factors such as levels of insight and motivation. We know in the short term, at least, it can reduce criminal justice involvement, certainly days in jail. We know in some studies it reduces substance abuse, and it may indeed stabilize the mental health symptoms. Criminal justice involvement, mental illness, and substance abuse, of course, each contribute to the risk for HIV contraction and transmission. And so they're overlapping populations, and in fact, the criminal justice population, as you all know, has the highest rates of substance abuse because of our drug laws, highest rates of co-occurring mental health problems, and highest rates of HIV and related hep C and other STD. So it's a critical population, and of course, most of all, because it's a primarily minority population, certainly in areas like New York, that again, those are the populations that are having the highest incidence of HIV, and those are our criminal justice populations. Disparity in services is sort of the discussion in each of these different literatures and of how do you get poor African-American Latinos into services for mental health. How do you do that for substance abuse? How do you do that for HIV? Of course, they're often disparate services. So because of that, I had been studying diversion models. I became interested in what would happen if into the K-12 IV intervention, would it indeed make any difference in accessing services and the right kinds of services for those with HIV? We have found the same thing happened when we took substance abuse models and shifted the focus to mental health. So we were wondering, or do you need a much more specialized service? So the specific aims that of this NIDA-funded study, and we'll just talk about a few of little bits of these, but basically was to determine the effectiveness of a Brooklyn-based task. This is a national model of treatment alternatives to safer communities in HIV intervention in terms of increasing knowledge, increasing attitudes such as expectations to use condoms, to negotiate with partners, reducing risk behaviors like unprotected sex and injected drug use. We're also beginning to look at, and the presentation here a little bit different than the abstract as well, is I sort of skipped ahead for you guys, and we're really talking about gender and race and mental illness more than some of the initial findings. So again, TASC is in every state. It was developed in the 70s as a best practice model to divert people from jail and in lieu of prison through an intensive case management program in which case management reaches out to the community, tracks people in the community, but also reports regularly to the court and gives urine testing. So the comparison sites, you'll see the confound, were substance abuse and mental health sites in Queens and Bronx boroughs of New York City with the intervention in Brooklyn. And the task model in New York has sort of shifted from a deferred prosecution to a deferred sentencing. They plead to the highest charge, and then if they complete the terms, they are sentenced and done. And then they've also added in a warrant squad that tracks people who have disappeared in the community. So it's quite a coercive model for substance users. And these are substance users at all levels, from misdemeanors to felony offenders, and many of them have additional charges. Almost all of them have burglary, robbery, assault, some attempted murders, other kinds of things in there. Mental health models, there are two. One, again, is a sort of generic court-seeking, jail-seeking case management model, and the other is a specialized mental health court. The intervention is in the same kinds of two tracks as above, only we've added, in both substance abuse and mental health, but added screening, testing, pre-post with pre-post counseling, condoms, their posters, the brochures, they each sit, watch videotapes. They then work with their case managers, they're tested on their knowledge, their attitudes, rechecked on those. But it doesn't have a specialized curriculum, which is what we're now testing in another wave. Criminal justice system, they're interested in how minimal, how inexpensive an intervention to actually make the difference. And so that's what this is the first part of. It makes some, but not a lot. So 1,145 adults are our baseline sample. I'm going to be actually presenting to you on a match pair analysis of a much smaller cohort of 100 in each group. The design quasi-experimental. And we had program and field interviewers giving the baseline protocol. This was an R21, so this was our compromise financially. But 6 and 12 months were given through an ACASI system with the support of research interviewers there. And our interest was in minimizing the kinds of concerns about reporting this criminal justice group might have in terms of their sex behaviors, which if reported, they could actually be sent back to jail because it's considered a violation during certain stages of substance abuse treatment. You're not supposed to be having sex, but you can later. You can also, if they're reporting that they're using drugs and that were to be reported to case managers, they have an obligation to report to the court. That could also involve sanctions. So we wanted to make sure that 6 and 12 month follow-ups were only with research staff, but also because of the privacy of the questions that we added, that they had the ability to get our help, but also answer them on their own. replicated, but every borough was completely different. So not only do we have, you know, an enhanced treatment group versus a treatment group, but we also have very different demographic characteristics in each of the boroughs. And so we used a propensity scoring system using 29 variables, both in self-report and administrative, in every domain that we were interested in: mental health, substance abuse, social support, criminal justice, and health, in order to make sure that the groups were exactly matched. And I'm gonna report to you on an even smaller matching, 101 pairs, in which we got rid of anybody who was white to just look at black versus Latino differences and men versus women. With the exception of days, our covariates are time at risk, time in the community, not in hospitals, not in jails or prisons, and days of treatment. And we ended up by using a method to figure out the exact time period that would correspond of these administrative non-self-report data to correspond with self-report six-month time period data. So just giving you a very brief sense, we looked at services, numbers of types of HIV services. We have much more detailed service analyses that we haven't started doing yet, our services data. This is just self-report for this presentation. We looked at the global assessment of functioning, a simple DSM-4 100-point scale, the Colorado Symptom Index that has good validity for co-occurring samples. With criminal justice for this presentation, we just looked at number of arrests, number of days past 6 months, but we have everybody's arrest records retrospectively and prospectively. Alcohol and drug use was looking at alcohol for this analysis, alcohol, crack, heroin, and illegal drugs, but we have a list of about, I think, 40 drugs and their days used for each. And then we looked at the HRBS, drug and sex risk behavior, the SRSA and SRSE around attitude, along with a scale looking at sympathy and stigma. We looked at HIV knowledge and quality of life in terms of the quality instrument and the Duke Social Support. Our analyses with these propensity groups were logistic regression in terms of which subgroups are likely to experience improvement. So we did sort of improvement, non-improvement for this presentation, as well as the general linear model. And looking at being able to see the trends of improvement over time. So the findings, super preliminarily, are, first let me just give you the group of these match pairs. And one of the things that those of you that know propensity scoring is that on the good side, you end up by being so squeaky clean, you have really, it is as if it was a random blind trial. On the bad side, you get rid of the variability. So our intervention group was much sicker, and our comparison group was less sick. And so what you get with these analyses is you really don't get the worst of the worst or the best of the best, because part of what happens with propensity scoring is everybody looks more like each other. That's the matching process. So we're again trying to figure out what to do analysis-wise that isn't just using propensity scores as covariates, and this is not really the way to do it. So in this particular sample, gender, it follows pretty much the criminal justice system, 80% male, 20% female. Certainly when you get into co-occurring with substance users only, it should be about 10% in regular prison samples. Race, again, we took out the white participants in the sample, which were just a few. Diagnosis, this was our division, that 40% of the intervention group, 50% in comparison of this subgroup, had a mental health or dual diagnosis, as I described to you, and the rest were substance using only. 19% of the intervention group of this cohort had HIV, AIDS, and again, this was a prevention study, not an intervention study with HIV, but the actual rates on the 1145 were 26%, and 17% of the comparison group, and their mean age was in the mid-30s. So, in terms of likelihood of improvement, the blue services. This is not enough, but it's good news. But it's also exactly what's been reported in the diversion literature and what we found over the last 10 years is certain diversion models, which is, if they're done right, they increase access to services. They particularly did so for women and for those who were Hispanic or Latino. They, on the other hand, over time, particularly after the six-month point, it decreased, both for the comparison group, but also for men and for blacks. AIDS knowledge, the intervention group, was only successful with the mentally ill folks. And a lot of what came out with these findings is that it really worked much better with those with mental health problems than this kind of generic model did with substance abuse. And my guess is a piece of that has to do with the mentally ill in this population are much less, have been much less exposed to any knowledge-based, education-based HIV prevention or intervention. And so you see a certain saturation for the substance abusers, and you need something much more. And ideally, you'd have that for both groups. AIDS sympathy increased again, but primarily for the mentally ill. Women did much better psychiatrically, but in some ways that's a compound because they also started much worse. And they're also more likely to be duly diagnosed. The intervention, let's see if there's anything else that's really... those that had mental health did worse in terms of criminal justice over time, with the intervention substance abusers only doing better. In terms of drug use and risk, as well as to some extent all criminal justice behavior, the entire sample, as you would hope under a task model, did much better. Everybody significantly reduced their drug and alcohol use. Everybody significantly reduced their criminal justice involvement. Everybody significantly reduced any kind of drug risk behavior. So the real issue was whether or not the sex behavior was being changed, and indeed it only was for those with who had mental health problems and those who were Latinos in the intervention group. So this is just, I'm going to skip through most of these and go right to the conclusions because we're finishing up now, but basically in the second step of analyses, this is where you start to see time, and it just sort of shows you for the intervention versus comparison group that really everybody did better in terms of getting types of services, but the HIV for the intervention group was significantly more. Similar kinds of things that, again, knowledge was quite high. This is a chronic, poor, substance-using, mentally ill population that has been in more services than probably any of us in this room could imagine, and therefore had a certain saturation level, but not affecting that knowledge, not necessarily affecting behavior in any way. And no significant effects on attitude change, which again says something about the intervention, and my thoughts really have to do with it not being either interactive or specific to people being able to negotiate with their partners and understanding the consequences of their behavior. I'm going to actually... Sorry, I'm going to just go right towards the... Apologize. I'm just going to try to go to the end. So, the intervention was effective at increasing access, but primarily to the 6 months, and it was maintained, but it didn't increase beyond that. And this was particularly so when we looked at gender and race interactions for women, Latinos, and those with mental health or dual diagnoses. Knowledge increased for those that were mentally ill, but not others. Arrests decreased, but only for those with substance use problems. Sex risk behaviors decreased, but only for those with mental illness. Drug use decreased by toxicology reports for those with mentally ill. We did it both ways. Self-report, there were no differences. Everybody did great. We looked does what it needs to do on access, but not a tremendous amount more than that. But with the exception of the mentally ill duly diagnosed that seem to respond to this added information in controlling some of their drug risk behavior and certainly their sexual risk behavior. So it may be useful for that as a first step. And on some level and to some degree over time, almost everybody got increased services access, increased their attitudes on harm to a more realistic level, decreased drug use, decreased psych symptoms, and increased income. And what we're working on to just wrap up is we're, again, focusing on mental illness diagnosis.